PhD student at Brock University. I'm presenting on work that I did in my undergraduate degree with Professor Mitrovic in the physics department. So to get started, I'd like to introduce the concept of the universality hypothesis, which is a powerful prediction of the renormalization group theory of phase transitions and applies to regular translationally invariant systems. So it states that the critical behavior of a translationally invariant system is not sensitive to the underlying microscopic interactions. It's actually determined by only a few macroscopic parameters, which are the symmetry group of the Hamiltonian, the spatial dimensionality of the system, and the range of the interactions. So what this means is that systems with, you know, completely different underlying microscopic interactions can exhibit similar behavior. And a common textbook example is the liquid to gas transition and the ferromagnetic transition in a uniaxial magnet, despite the fact that, you know, in the first case you have van der Waals interactions, in the second case you have magnetic interactions, these guys still share the same critical exponents. Now, we're interested in knowing what happens to systems which are scale invariant or may have non-integer dimension, such as fractals. So in order to characterize fractal structures, there's a bunch of different topological properties. So the first one that I'm going to talk about is the Hausdorffer fractal dimension, which may be non-integer, and it provides a measure for how completely a fractal fills space. So it's given by the following relation on the screen, where n is the number of self-similar copies created when the lattice is scaled by a factor s. So therefore, the fractal dimension is given by the ratio of the logarithms. Now, here's a little example. This is a Sierpinski triangle. And what I have here is the first iteration. It has three little triangles with a length L. In the next iteration of creating the fractal structure, we have three first-order triangles, and the length is doubled. And that gives us a fractal dimension of ln 3 over ln 2, or about 1.58. The order of ramification is defined as the number of significant bonds which must be cut in order to isolate an arbitrarily large bounded cluster of points from the rest of the structure. So regular translationally invariant systems have an infinite order of ramification, and this can be understood by considering the following figure. If I want to isolate some bounded structure of points here from including the center point, if I increase the size of the system, the number of bonds that I have to cut increases with the size of the system. And this tells me that in the thermodynamic limit, it's going to be infinite. Fractals are a different case. So this here is a Sierpinski triangle. If I wanted to, for example, isolate some point here in the lower left triangle, I don't have to cut an infinite number of points. I can do so by just cutting a minimum of 2, which gives us a minimum order of ramification of 2. Lastly, what I'll talk about is the lacunarity, which provides a measure of the deviation from translational symmetry in a lattice and the amount of inhomogeneity. Therefore, regular translationally invariant systems have zero lacunarity, whereas this is a fractal structure, Sierpinski carpet, which has a non-zero lacunarity because it's not as homogeneous. And then if we look at one more version of a Sierpinski carpet with a large central gap in, right here, we see that its lacunarity is larger. So we're not the first people to look at the critical behavior of fractal lattices. In fact, Geffen et al. Were the first to do this. In a series of papers using renormalization group techniques, they examined the Ising model on fractal structures to determine the relative importance of the topological properties to critical phenomena on these lattices. And they found that fractals with a given Hausdorff dimension have a finite transition temperature if and only if the minimum order of ramification is infinite, regardless of the fractal dimension. They then used a correspondence between a pure resistor network connecting the sites of a lattice and the low temperature properties of n-component spin models on the same lattice to conclude that there's no finite temperature transition even if the system is infinitely ramified. Now, they only considered fractals with fractal dimension less than 2, and so they conjectured that the reason that they saw an absence of phase transition is because the lower critical dimension of continuous spin models is d equals 2, and for any fractal embedded in some d-dimensional space, the fractal dimension is always less than or equal to the Euclidean dimension. But we're interested in knowing what happens when the fractal dimension is greater than or equal to 2. Subsequently, Monceau and Hassau performed Monte Carlo studies of the Ising model on structures which were infinitely ramified, and they found weak universality in the fact that the critical exponents depended on the lacunarity. So in our work, we focused on the classical XY model, which describes a configuration of two-dimensional spins which can orient themselves in the XY plane within the interval 0 to 2 pi. The Hamiltonian describing the system is given by the expression on the screen, where J is the coupling constant, the sum is taken over nearest neighbors only, and theta I is the angle variable on the ith site. Okay. Because of the continuous symmetry of the XY model, we see interesting spin excitations that we do not see in the discrete symmetry Ising model, such as spin waves and vortices. It's well known that in two dimensions, there's no long-range order in this model, but instead, it exhibits an unusual transition known as the Berezinski-Kosterlitz-Thallus, or BKT transition, which results from the unbinding of pairs of vortices and antivortices, or positive and negative vortices. And this is a transition from a state of quasi-long-range order to disordered phase. The main signature of this transition is a universal jump in the helicity modulus at the transition temperature of 2 over pi, as predicted by Nelson and Kosterlitz. In simulations on finite systems, this discontinuous jump appears as a decrease with increasing temperature, which becomes more steep near the transition temperature as the system size is increased. Okay. Now, just to give you an idea of what is the helicity modulus, what does this mean? So essentially, the helicity modulus provides a measure of the rigidity of a system to an external twisting strain. So when at zero temperature, when your system's in the ferromagnetic phase and all the spins are aligned, you expect that there'll be a finite helicity modulus, whereas in the high temperature paramagnetic phase, when all the spins are randomly oriented, this response to the twisting strain will vanish. Now, in regular three-dimensional systems, the XY model can undergo a continuous phase transition, and the main signature of this transition is a power law behavior in the helicity modulus just below the transition temperature. And this transition actually results not only from the unbinding of pairs of vortices and positive and negative vortices, but also from unbinding of vortex strings, which are the three-dimensional analogs of vortices. So these are the fractals that we looked at. The Sierpinski pyramid has a fractal dimension of 2 and a minimum order of ramification of 4, which is finite, obviously. Sierpinski carpet has a fractal dimension of 1.8928 and is infinitely ramified. The Manger sponge has a fractal dimension of 2.7268 and is also infinitely ramified. And using a procedure, the same procedure as Geffen et al., we computed the lacunarity for the infinitely ramified structures, and the values are on the screen. So we use the Monte Carlo method to perform simulations of these structures. We implemented the Metropolis algorithm for the Sierpinski pyramid, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. This is a standard algorithm which generates new configurations of a system from a previous configuration by flipping a single spin at a time. Consequently, new configurations are strongly correlated with old ones, and so this algorithm becomes inefficient near the critical point due to a phenomenon known as critical slowing down, which has been observed in real physical systems. In computer simulations, this critical slowing down manifests itself as a diverging autocorrelation time, which is roughly the time it takes to generate statistically independent configurations. So if there is a phase transition, then you need a more efficient algorithm, and this is why we use the Wolf cluster algorithm on the Sierpinski carpet and Manger sponge. As these are infinitely ramified structures, we were anticipating phase transition. Now, this Wolf cluster algorithm uses non-local updating scheme, which allows us to avoid the critical slowing down. It's based on the Fortuyn-Castellan theorem of phase transitions. And it involves generating single clusters of spins and flipping them sequentially. So in computer simulations, we're always concerned about important sampling. And I just wanted to make a note here that both the Metropolis algorithm and Wolf cluster algorithms lead to, they're both ergodic and satisfy the principle of detailed balance, and they lead to a distribution of states given by the canonical ensemble. And this allows us to compute the thermal average of a quantity, you know, very easily by just averaging over all of the configurations of our system. Because, you know, fractals lack translational symmetry, we couldn't employ the periodic boundary conditions. So what we did was we used the open boundary conditions where they're essentially free, so nothing's coupled together, as well as the closed boundary conditions where we took the outer sites and coupled them to the nearest outer sites. So this is what it would look like for the carpet. We calculated the heat capacity per site from the fluctuations in internal energy. Here, n is the number of sites, and the angular brackets denote the Monte Carlo average. We also calculated the linear magnetic susceptibility from the fluctuations in magnetization, and also the helicity modulus following the standard procedure of Shi, Ebner, and Stroud. Now, this procedure involves thinking of the XY Hamiltonian as describing a set of Josephson-coupled superconducting grains in zero magnetic field, and the spin variable on a particular site becomes the phase of the superconducting order parameter. So I'm just going to move on because I just want to get to the results. So what I have here is just the results of the helicity modulus because I don't have time to go over heat capacity and susceptibility. But the helicity modulus actually gives us the deepest insight into what's going on, and then the heat capacity and magnetic susceptibility kind of complement these results. So what we have here are the results for the Sierpinski pyramid. And what you can see is with the closed boundary condition, we see that as we increase the system size, the low temperature values decrease with increasing system size. Now, because the downturn occurs near the universal 2 over pi line, that also causes a shift of the downturn to lower temperatures as we increase with the system size. Furthermore, with the open boundary conditions, helicity modulus is zero for all system sizes, and this allowed us to conclude that there was no phase transition in the Sierpinski pyramid. As far as the Sierpinski carpet goes, we see a similar kind of behavior, a rapid downturn near the universal 2 over pi line, which is what we see with the putative BKT transition. However, we see the same thing. The low temperature values are falling as we increase the system size, goes down. The temperature at which the transition occurs, or the putative transition occurs, also shifts to zero. And with the open boundary conditions, the helicity modulus is zero. Just to solidify our conclusions, we also looked at how the maximum value or the low temperature value of the helicity modulus changes with increasing system size. And we were able to fit this data to the following expression. And you can clearly see from this that as n goes to infinity, the maximum helicity modulus goes to zero, which also allowed us to conclude that there's no phase transition in the Sierpinski carpet at any finite temperature. For the Menger sponge, the results looked a little bit different. We again see that it depends on the system size, and as we increase the system size, the low temperature values fall. What's different about this system, though, is that it appears to be insensitive to the 2 over pi line. It exhibits, you know, similar behavior as a cubic lattice, a power law behavior, but again, because with the open boundary conditions, it's zero, and because we see it fall, we can make the same conclusion. Now, just to show you, we did a similar fit, got a similar kind of equation, and we could conclude that the helicity modulus vanishes at all finite temperatures, and there's no phase transition in the Menger sponge. So just to wrap things up, we performed Monte Carlo studies of the classical XY model on three fractal structures. Some were infinitely ramified, had fractal dimension larger than 2, and some were finitely ramified, but we found no phase transition on any of these structures. This tells us that the fractal dimension is not the deciding factor in determining whether or not the phase transition takes place, and that other topological properties, such as the lacunarity, may influence the critical behavior of these structures. And I just wanted to make a note about the differences between discrete and continuous symmetry spin models, whereas with the discrete symmetry case, it was the order of ramification that played the largest role, and here we see that that's not the case. Thank you for your time.
Questions for the speaker?
Yeah, maybe this is a simple question, but what material are you using?
What
material?
What method?
No, material.
Oh, material.
Yeah.
There is no material. These are just, yeah, these.
You were talking about the bone and
the Menger sponge. So there was a Sierpinski pyramid, Menger sponge, and Sierpinski carpet. So these are just, they're mathematical objects. Yeah, scale invariant. Yes, exactly. So, I mean, these things do exist in nature. Like you find, you know, snowflakes and. I mean, they're all over the place, to be honest with you, fractal structures. We were just wondering, you know, what happens, because it's pretty straight cut what goes on in regular translationally invariant systems. You know, there's only three deciding factors, essentially. But we're wondering, what are the deciding factors? How can you categorize these scale invariant systems with non-integer dimension?
Okay, what's the software I'm using for this?
Pardon me?
What software are you using?
I use Fortran. F-77 or F-90 or something. We're old school. Yeah.
You are not using any like.
No, I did. Yeah, I did this. It was just on like desktop okay. computers. No offense to you, SharkNet people.
Yes, question in the back.
Can you rationalize the absence of phase transition by the fact that you don't have vertices with the logarithmic energy?
I think, to be honest, I think a lot of it has to do with the structures that we chose. So I think, you know, I don't think that, you know, any sort of even quasi long range order can form in these structures because of the fact that there's these giant central gaps. So I think that.
So they don't support vertices.
Yeah, and the next thing would be to probably pick a particular structure with a, you know, maybe infinitely ramified structure with a fractal dimension greater than 2 and vary the lacunarity of the structure, which changes like the size of the central gap and the amount of homogeneity in the lattice, and see how that affects everything.
So what's happening is the points at which, you know, minus angle x y ball, throw a lattice, you have spins, they have orientation,
yeah.
There's some like mean elasticity between them. Your lattice is now a fractal.
It's a fractal. Yeah, we put spins. Maybe I should have said that. We put spins at each of the microscopic. So essentially, we took, you know, the smallest spacing to be 1, and then the fractal structures would get larger and larger and larger. So we went up to, if I go. So this one's a bad example. Maybe this one's all right. I like this guy though. We went up to 160,000 sites. That was the largest one that we did. So yeah, the smallest spacing, you know, we just set it equal to 1 and then we just let the thing get, you know, really, really large.
And this Wolf algorithm, so instead of, you know, having a Monte Carlo loop where you just have some change one of the spins?
No.
Changing collection?
Yes, exactly. So you start a cluster, essentially. You pick a spin, and you decide he's going to be in the cluster. And then there's, you know, certain conditions for determining whether or not you pass through the entire lattice and decide if the other spins should join the cluster. Essentially, what you're doing is taking, so for your particular, you pick a randomly chosen reflection axis, and you know, it's just randomly chosen for each pass. And you pick a spin, and then you essentially project all of the spins onto this axis to form, like, essentially an Ising model along, you know, one perpendicular. So you'll have a component of the spin that's perpendicular and a component of the spin that's parallel to the axis. And depending on the values of the perpendicular and parallel components, they'll join the cluster with a certain probability. And then you keep going through until no new sites join the cluster, and then you flip them all together.
Great. Any more questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.